Suddenly, my analysis of the 2018 midterm elections looks better and better. How on earth does a lowly local podcaster trump the mainstream media and all the so-called experts? Well, anybody should be able to do it, but we're going to talk about that fireside in podcast 769, the Bob Davis Podcast's The New Talk. We're heading into late fall. I love it because we're finally getting the beautiful blue skies, and the climate change that we call winter is coming, and that is when all of your systems should be running right. So we're talking about water heaters, we're talking about heating systems, we're talking about plumbing, we're talking about any other kind of systems that you have that involve heating or air conditioning, because when it comes to keeping all these systems running right, especially these days at home or business, because business we often forget about, when you have plumbing or heating problems or air conditioning problems, you got to have reliable service. And I recommend Ryan Plumbing and Heating in St. Paul. This is the number you call, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. Ryan goes back four generations in St. Paul. What do they do? Well, you should know by now, because if you've been listening to my podcast, Ryan has been sponsoring for a long time quality replacement and repair of all plumbing, heating, and air conditioning systems, residential and business. So remember, when you have problems this winter, I often talk about my heating going out, but I also lost a water heater a few years ago. When it comes to keeping all these systems running right, you want reliable service. Ryan Plumbing in St. Paul, 651-224-4771. In Minneapolis, 612-927-6488. They go back four generations in Frogtown, residential and business, and they're metro-wide from St. Paul. So if you live in Plymouth or Invergrove, or if you live in St. Bonnie, or if you live in Maple Grove, they can take care of you. Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Check them out online at ryanplumbing.com. Well, it's part of the election news, the fact that foreign manufacturing has become really key as the president's tariffs are convincing businesses to bring their production back to the United States. And what they do first is companies bring it in-house, and then they ask themselves, why did we do this? What you want is a company that is dedicated to manufacturing, and that would be DepoStar. They're in Minnesota. They do fantastic design, engineering, and manufacturing. DepoStar, visit their website at depostar.com or click on their banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcasts.com. Not to blow my own horn, but I guess I'll blow my own horn a little bit. Everyone should be able to. Once in a while, I did 9 podcasts, which wasn't supposed to be a series. It didn't start out to be a series. It's one of the cool things about podcasting that you would never be able to do on the radio, and that is 9 days of shows about this one thing. And I was able to do 9 podcasts, a full series on the midterms, and I used data from throughout the spring, so from going back to like March and April all the way up to late August when I did those 9 podcasts. And what I did was I took averages of the toss-up House, Senate, and governor's elections. There were about 50 or 60 of these identified across the country. And as I did it, I looked into local areas, and I tried to get a sense of whether evidence in the form of polling or a story existed that would support the national media storyline, that there was this historic wave of Democrat victories that would come as the result of voting in the 2018 midterm election. And at the time, what I found was that there was and remain a number of close political contests in districts all over the country and in states all over the country. If we're talking about senators and governors, there were and there remain more of those close elections in the House, fewer in the Senate as we get closer to the election, and fewer still when it comes to governors. I said over a month ago that I did not find much evidence to support a Democrat wave theory, right? Lo and behold, what we are seeing now are headlines like these. And I was just blown away to see these headlines. CBS News, could Republicans hold the House in 2018? Yes. The New York Times, what happens if the GOP wins in 2018? Which is kind of almost, a dystopian view of this horrid future if the Republicans win. And then, and not, you know, not surprising, and from Fox News, GOP candidates now dead even with Democrats in the most competitive House races, poll finds. And then finally from Politico, Democrat Senate hopes shift from winning the majority to limiting losses. Now, first thing is, I told you, if you were listening and subscribing to these podcasts, the Bob Davis podcast, I told you over a month ago that all these elections were going to tighten up and be close as we got closer to election. And we're now, as we speak, about 10 days away. In fact, you are now hearing candidates in both parties saying just that, that they were always close races. And I was shocked to hear that as well. Second, the polls always tighten up as people begin to make their final decisions. And I'm going to talk about that a little bit, because there's an awful lot of talk about these quote-unquote swing voters. I don't think they're swing voters, and I haven't thought that for years, so I'm going to talk about that. Third, none other than Beto O'Rourke, who was and remains a media favorite to be the next senator representing the great state of Texas, said yesterday, it's not about swing voters. It's about getting your people out to vote, which is what I've been saying all along. So I feel very vindicated by today's headlines and the topics of conversations in the mainstream media and other kinds of media. And if you want to hear those podcasts where you can hear them, you know, a month or so, actually more than a month ago, laying this out, I will provide links to them with a blog for this podcast. So just look for that link that says if you can find them here, and you'll see. I'll do a search on my site and post the whole list. So how does a podcaster like me, who really isn't juiced into what people, quote, in the know, manage to basically predict what the mainstream media is going to talk about a month ahead of time? And again, first of all, it's the way that you do it is you don't make predictions. That's the first thing. You say and you demand of yourself as a matter of integrity that you're not going to make predictions. Then you conduct a careful examination of whatever existing data is there. District data, state data, polling, stories that exist when you look up the politicians and so on. And you can't possibly, when we're talking about 435 House races and we're talking about 60 toss-up races, you can't possibly know all the details. But the main thing also, in addition to carefully examining the data, is understanding what polls are. I talk about that a lot in those 9 podcasts. And seeing that in many of these House elections, there were no polls. And I just checked them last night. And I was shocked once again to see that there still aren't that many polls or any polls in some of these House races that they're on TV saying are going to be pickups for Democrats. And they have no reason to say that, because there is no data to support that a Republican incumbent is in fact challenged. And again, I'm not saying they're not going to get, you know, thrown out of office, but saying that they are with no data is just as irresponsible as if I say they're not. So what you also have to do, and what I did, was watch for these storylines to develop and then test the storylines against polling data and real news. So I find myself going a lot to these districts, whether it's Ballotopedia or RealClearPolitics.com, and looking at the data before I say, okay, so this storyline makes sense. So there are a couple of good examples. Most of them are in the Senate. The GOP is touting Heidi Heitkamp's problems in North Dakota. And she is in trouble, at least according to polls. She's 5, 6, 7, 8 points down. But the biggest potential for egg on the face for the media elites in New York and Washington is across that giant flying over territory known as Texas, where media darling and, quote, rock star Beto O'Rourke faces incumbent Republican Senator the oily Ted Cruz. Remember, we were being told that Cruz was going to lose, and that, and by the way, when I looked at the polls, I saw a close race. And the truth is that I saw Cruz ahead most of the time. And now, lately, he is pulling out in front of O'Rourke. Cruz remains at least 4 points, if not more than 4, sometimes 8 points or more ahead in the latest polls, and the lead has been widening. What I've done is give you the details, not just on the individual races, but also in terms of what the polls I'm looking at are. For example, I talk about the New York Times Siena college polls and the difficulties with that, because what I think they're doing is calling registered voters, and they are hitting pockets of voters. So you can see these wild gyrations where somebody's down 12 in a close race, and then they're back up to minus one when Rasmussen does a poll or Emerson College or something like that. So you have to look into the details. And again, you have to force yourself not to make predictions about what you think the outcome is going to be. So if you were to look at the Tennessee Senate polls 6 weeks ago, you would say that the Democrat was way ahead and that there was no way that the Republican was going to get ahead. Well, the Republican's up by 6 points in Tennessee now, suddenly. See, this is what's going on. Now, by the way, that 6 points is within the margin of error, but you know, it's worth mentioning that these were storylines that they were using to predict all this stuff was going to happen, and that we were going to see this huge change in who was the majority in charge of the legislative branch of our government. That's what midterm elections are all about, except for governors. And that it was going to be this wave election. Well, what's a wave election, right? And so I defined that as well. And then I looked at what the data actually shows. Is there an evidence for a wave? They don't call them waves because they happen every election. They don't happen very often, and that's why they call them waves. So you have to see evidence. Now, I said in one of those podcasts that I actually missed the Republican wave in 2010 because I didn't believe it. So that doesn't mean, because I don't believe it or I can't find evidence for it, that it won't happen. It means that I refuse to say it's going to happen or not going to happen, because I think that's irresponsible. That makes me, that, in my opinion, somebody that does that thinks you, the listener, is an idiot and can't think for yourself. It's just, you know, now suddenly on cue, because the races have tightened up, suddenly all the magpies, including Rush Limbaugh and Glenn Beck and all the rest of these guys, and including the New York Times, apparently, have suddenly discovered competitive races. Well, they were always competitive races. And this is the problem with making predictions that you have to walk back when things tighten down, as they will do, whether it's Claire McCaskill in Missouri, who was basically in the ground, according to the media, and now suddenly that's a close race and she's up slightly. Or Dean Heller in Nevada, who was to suffer the same fate, and now he is. Now you're starting to see the stories. Oh, Dean Heller, he's an amazing guy suddenly. Or even Joe Donnelly in Indiana, where you know he was going to be thrown out of office, and he's up by 3 points within the margin of error, but he's ahead. All three of these politicians have fought their way back to ties or small advantages 10 days away from election. And then I can't forget to mention the Arizona Senate, which was just, you know, a week and a half ago. We were seeing articles like the path to, you know, control of the U.S. Senate runs through Arizona, where Martha McSally was really challenged and so forth. Coming out of the primaries, you know, she was down. But she has been – that has been a close race from the get-go. And now McSally is either up by one or down by one. And again, within the margin of error, then you have to look at Arizona as a whole, and you have to look at the issues, and you have to know, you know, about the people and how they are, and you have to judge a competitive race. That's one of those elections that is impossible to say what the outcome is. And most of them are like that, by the way. And that apparently that does not stop people on television from saying, you know, this place in California is going to be a flip. This is going to be a pickup. That's going to, you don't. They don't know that. So I can't say that enough. So part of the problem are the nonpartisan so-called analysts and political scientists like Charlie Cook and Larry Sabato, who consistently paint a rosy scenario for Democrats and grim results for Republicans. And I've watched these guys two or three election cycles, and they hardly ever have anything positive to say about Republicans. Doesn't mean that they're always wrong. Doesn't mean that they should be talking about Republicans or anything else. I just think that they're clearly biased to the Democrat side, whether that is a, you know, by design so that they get on television and they're not perceived as partisan right-wingers, or whether they just really feel that way. But they find all kinds of blue skies from the same data that I look at, and I say, well, this is a toss-up. It's a close race, and there are hard to determine outcomes. So they are, in fact, partisans, and especially Democrats should understand this, because the commentators And all these other people take their cues from people like Charlie Cook because that's where they go to get the data. And so if it's a repeat of 2016 and the commentators are telling you what Charlie Cook said and Larry Sabato said, and they're not, the anchors aren't actually looking at the data and understanding the data to the extent that they can say it's a toss-up and we're just going to wait for these people to vote and we'll see what happens, there might be a lot of Democrats who are really upset because they thought this outcome was going to be something that they wanted. So what is actually going on here? We're going to get into that. Whether you know it or not, depending on what business you're in, there is a payment revolution going on in this country, literally a payment processing revolution. More and more clients are saying, can I pay using my phone? More and more clients are using electronic means to pay their bills. And I love it because you get paid faster, goes right into your account. And I work with ReliaFund. They are my payment processor, ReliaFund. There is a ReliaFund button on my page. And I'm actually pretty excited about it. If you have a business and you do business through your website, listen up. If you are a developer and you create software for back offices or e-commerce for your clients, listen up, because ReliaFund is really interested in working with developers to integrate payment processing solutions to existing systems and new systems. Finally, if you are in business and you take credit card payments and you're looking for better deals, ReliaFund does that too. What are they? ReliaFund is a payment processor that's been providing integrated solutions to get payments cleared for like 20 years. So they are a part of the payment revolution from the get-go. If you're developing an e-commerce website, they answer the phone. If you are a developer, they answer the phone. You will actually deal with a human being. Kevin Hill or Greg Lowry, they're great guys, and they're very interested in working with you to help you with your payments. No long-term contracts. They're secure. They're technology-focused. They're really effective. I've had issues with payments, and they get right on it. They call me or they send me an email. 866-243-5040. 866-243-5040. Or you can check them out online at ReliaFund.com. If you click on the banner at the top of the page at the BobDavisPodcast.com or the hyperlink, the outbound link in this blog for this podcast, it takes you to their contact page and you can tell them more about what you do. Remember, it's ReliaFund.com, ReliaFund.com. Well, I've certainly talked about how much I hate my printer because I hate paying for print cartridges for laser printers because they're so expensive. So I am using Cartridge World in Maple Grove because Cartridge World can save you up to 30% compared to the big box stores, and Cartridge World cartridges are guaranteed to perform as good as new. In fact, I'm going to tell you, they're better, and here's why. I just put one in my printer, and I notice, I can tell you by looking at these two different pages, you can't see it, but I can. The printing with the Cartridge World cartridge is really nice. It's very dark, and it's not just because it was full. It's much better in terms of function. So I'm really surprised at this. And again, they do free delivery on qualifying orders. Cartridge World in Maple Grove off of Weaver Lake Road between Dairy Queen and Subway, 763-420-6632, 763-420-6632, or click on the banner at the top of the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. Cartridge World. What is happening? Part of it is elections tighten as we get closer to Election Day. I think I've made that pretty clear throughout this podcast. People start to make their decisions right about now. And really, it's almost 10 days out, a little early, even though there's early voting. The media has a penchant for believing that there is some mysterious voting group who's going to turn the election, or that there are wide swaths of voters who swing back and forth by Election Day. Not really. There are often shifts, and these are often historic shifts. I talked a little bit about this earlier. There are often historic shifts in patterns of voting, whether they're demographic or they are driven by issues or candidates. The most recent was the so-called pivot counties of 2016, who voted for Obama, twice and then flipped to Trump in 2016. Now, when I say pivot county, it doesn't mean that the county was 100% Democrat and then became 100% Republican in 2016. What it means is that in certain parts of the county, certain zip codes of the county, large numbers of Republicans came out to vote for Trump, driving the vote 10, 5, 20, 1, 2% in favor of Trump in 2016. So they call them pivot counties. So that's a significant movement that I imagine, without being too I'm almost afraid to say it, but I would imagine that we will see if that phenomena continues. And you continue to see the people that voted in previously Democrat counties for Republicans. There are some explanations. In some cases, they think that some of its exurban movement toward these rural counties, which used to be Democrat or Republican, and they flipped. So you'd have to look deeper into pivot counties. You might remember the soccer moms when Clinton was president, because women like Clinton, supposedly, or the so-called Reagan Democrats who were largely pro-life Democrats or blue-collar Democrats or younger Democrats who switched parties in 1980, largely because of the abortion issue, largely because most of them were Catholic and urban Catholics, or they were younger people who were enamored of the Reagan economic ideas. The other one that comes to mind for me was Nixon's famous Southern strategy, which emphasized law and order over LBJ's liberal policies when it came to social issues, no matter how well-intentioned. It also was this is when Nixon was talking about law and order. It was a good way for Nixon to differentiate himself from Hubert Humphrey's whole thing about the war. In general, I take the view that unless something changes, though, predicting that some thing will change the vote overall is silly, because you have to wait till the game is played, and if there's a different outcome because there's some new running back that plays three quarters this time instead of two or one, well, then you have something to talk about, don't you, after the game is over. But until the game is over, you might not even notice the thing that moves the needle in that particular game. But there are some things happening on a bigger level here, which may actually explain some of the recent tightening in favor of Republicans if all things remain the same. First of all, Democrats have been losing favor with middle-class Americans, and the so-called gender gap is, you know, maybe collapsing is too strong a word, but okay. For example, while women still view the Democratic Party favorably, recent polls show that women preference for Republicans increasing by at least 5%. Democrats have completely lost their advantage with American men, with double-digit increases for the Republicans for males. And Republicans now enjoy a polling advantage with middle-class Americans, which is really amazing since the Republicans are always viewed as the party of the rich, which is actually not true. Even among low-income Americans and the wealthy, which is actually a Democrat advantage these days, the advantage is smaller. Finally, a lot has been made about the Democrat outreach to so-called Hispanic voters. And I want to talk about this briefly because Hispanics come in many flavors. They are not all one thing. People think, oh, so-and-so is Hispanic. They might be a recent immigrant from Mexico. They might be part of the upper class from Colombia who have emigrated to the United States. They might be people who have lived, whose people have lived, and who have lived in the United States since before the United States was the United States where they live. So you have Californios, and you have people in Texas who are Hispanic who don't even appear to be, quote unquote, appear to be Hispanic, or they have Hispanic surnames, or they vote Republican, and yet they might look like a Mexican, but they're Texans. So it's Hispanic voters are not a monolithic group. According to Vox, which is a good source for this conversation because Vox is generally viewed as some kind of a wacko liberal thing by crazy conservatives, a recent poll in Vox suggested Latinos aren't experiencing much of an outreach from Democrats or Republicans. The idea was that Hispanics were going to be against Trump, and this would inspire a blue wave of voters. Well, there's an awful lot of Hispanic Texans and Arizonans who are for increased controls for immigration because they have been long-term citizens of the United States. I think that's more interesting than classifying somebody by their race. In addition, while I criticize Trump's economic policies as Keynesian, basically borrowing money to prime the economic pump, in this case for a tax cut, I also question whether a jobs strategy rather than a productivity strategy is good economic policy. The facts do, though, support job growth across the United States and increased economic activity. Now, where it's going to go, couldn't tell you. I mean, I have my ideas about that. But for the purposes of the election, not much is going to change economically in the next 10 days. We won't know whether the policies that Trump is enacting at this point are going to come back to bite us later or not. Unemployment, anyway, currently has been decreasing to very low levels, and clearly there is some level of GDP and consumption growth 10 days before the election. Where that job growth is and where the economic growth is happening is really important as it pertains to the election, and this is what these guys aren't talking about on television. They're too busy telling you why Gillum in Florida is this amazing politician, too busy telling you why Beto O'Rourke is this incredible politician, or why, you know, Joe Donnelly is this moderate, you know, Democrat in Indiana, and so he's already said that he could work with Trump. And, you know, we've got all kinds of storylines associated with these guys. So Florida and Texas have posted September to September job gains that are actually records. Ohio has had the largest job gains in 20 years. And some of these gains across the country are at record levels in various states. And you have to know where it's happening to understand whether this is going to have a positive effect for Republicans or Democrats. When you have analysts running around saying, it's all about Trump, it's all about Trump, well, in Ohio, that may benefit. So the implication is if it's all about Trump, it's bad for Republicans. You know, when you're looking at job gains in Florida and Texas and Ohio, that's a big deal. And what generally happens is that the intelligentsia passes these off as, quote unquote, benefiting rich people because of the corporate tax cuts. Oddly, one of the biggest pieces of the pie when it comes to Democratic support are rich people. But a job gain is a job gain on the campaign trail. The Economist has a new article today suggesting that manufacturing jobs are defying expectations, and especially those in powerfully Democrat Rust Belt states. What kind of upside down, you know, situation is this? Why is this happening? And so forth. And in Wisconsin, where Governor Scott Walker is in the fight of his life to win a third term, the economic growth numbers for the state are pretty hard to ignore, even if you are for, you know, blue-collar union guys. And this is where you hear these arguments that, well, this benefits the rich. Well, you know, strong economic indicators and unemployment well below the national average in places like Wisconsin, and lots of investment in the state that wasn't there before, like in Indiana, that's a big story for any incumbent in a heartland industrial state. And that may be part of the reason why Democrat Joe Donnelly in Indiana is running ahead slightly, because these kinds of numbers usually benefit incumbents. You see where we're going with this, because the idea is that incumbent Republicans are going to be pushed out of the House because they're defending more seats. And, you know, if the economic numbers and the performance of the U.S. economy is an indicator for this election, especially in Republican districts, you know, I think it's quite a stretch to predict that that's a seat that's going to flip because people hate Trump. You know, you got to take this stuff into account. And again, I'm not making predictions. I'm just saying this is the kind of stuff nobody talks about, because I don't know why. I mean, I almost want to answer it, but I'll leave you to answer that. Even in Minnesota, with a moderate Republican electorate statewide and a progressive electorate in Minneapolis and St. Paul and Rochester, the governor's election and one Senate election in Minnesota are actually tightening up, and it's a surprise. 6 points, which is within the margin of error, even though they'll tell you it isn't, it is, for Tina Smith versus Karen Housley, and for Jeff Johnson, the Republican candidate for governor, and Tim Walz, who is the Democrat and was favored to win by 10, 12, whatever number of points. So if you're a Democrat, these are hard facts to hear, and you might be inclined to shout at your phone or your device or refuse to believe it, and that's fine. These are not partisan facts. These are things that are going on that nobody talks about these days. So it's fine if you don't want to believe it, but I have tried to find the least most offensive facts to present in this thing, and to show and to prove that this is a far from decided race, whether you're a Democrat incumbent or Republican incumbent. If you are a Republican, you know, you might feel triumphant and heartened. Well, you know, of course, you know, it was always like this because Trump's great, people love him, and blah, 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 blah. I have rejoinders for both of you. First of all, here's some don'ts. Don't listen to these national generic poll number stories. Generic polls, you have 435 local races. They're called House races. Everybody in Congress is running for re-election. We're only talking about 40 or 50 or 60 races, right? So national polls, when it comes to the 5th District in California, or the 5th District in Illinois, or the 25th District in Florida, are not predictive, because they are asking people in national polls, not asking people in individual districts whether they're going to vote Democrat or Republican. So they're not predictive and they're useless. Don't listen to presidential preference polls. Most of the time, those preference polls don't have anything to do with anything. They are just natural movements up and down based on polling inconsistencies, especially when there is nothing going on, like a giant war or some calamity, to drive them up or down. So you get polling inconsistencies, and the president goes from 47 to 51, or 47 to, you know, even 41, and everyone goes, oh, his popularity numbers are down to 41%. He's going to lose everything. Because this is a truism, a shibboleth, that presidents with approval ratings of under 50% always lose seats in the House and lose majorities, which might be true for the last 40 years or so. But then again, a truism is a truism until suddenly it isn't. So the bull market goes along and everyone's a bull until the market flips and becomes a bear market. And then suddenly all the bull market guys are wrong. No, they were right when they were right, and they're wrong when they're wrong. And that's just how it is. And that's the same thing for presidential popularity ratings. It doesn't really tell you why. I would say a popularity rating of 47% is good enough for me to be 50%, because his popularity rating could be 41% or 52%, and it would be the same number in a presidential popularity poll. And by the way, again, I'm going to repeat, they're not polling toss-up districts enough to make any judgments about what's going on to happen. In most cases, there are no polls in a lot of these quote-unquote toss-up districts, and so there will most certainly be wins and losses for both parties. Where it all shakes out, that's why we watch the games, right? I couldn't possibly predict whether House leadership will change hands or not, and neither can anybody else. So as far as what's going on, in conclusion, the other factor that I think weighs on people in the Midwest, where the media elites don't go and don't understand, this is what they do. They fly in with their black clothing, and they rent a car, and they at Cedar Rapids Airport, and they drive to the event, and they park the car in the parking lot, and they take their little recorders in, and they go in there, or they go in there with the film crew, and they walk around, and they talk to Joe in the lobby. And that's their extent of spending any time in the great, flying over territory, whether it's Cedar Rapids, Iowa, or Fargo, or Minneapolis, St. Paul, or Madison, Wisconsin. And I don't think they understand the people that live here. I've lived here my whole life, so I have some level of understanding. And I'm going to tell you what I think a giant piece is that nobody can really quantify, myself included. And that is this question of incivility in politics these days, whether it's beatings, sign rippings, chasing people into restaurants, kicking people in the head, public fights between idiot radicals, and the chaos tactics, especially of the left right now in the present time frame. I think that these are very bad for whichever political view they seem to be associated with. Now, I'm going to talk about it in the next podcast, but I think a greater question in the wake of the whole Kavanaugh hearing Donnybrook for the Democrats was the way in which people on the left mobilized to voice their opinions, banging on the doors of the Supreme Court and so forth and so on. Now, free speech is free speech. I don't know if anybody's ever banged on the doors of the Supreme Court before, but I think middle Americans, and it really doesn't matter whether it's blue-collar guys from Milwaukee or farmers in western Wisconsin and Ohio or miners in Duluth or Hibbing, really don't appreciate what they see as disrespect for democratic institutions, such as they are. If Democrats don't succeed in achieving their storyline, which is taking over the House and the Senate on Election Day, there's going to be some very angry, frustrated, and disappointed people in Los Angeles and the north side of Chicago and Manhattan who are simply not going to understand what happened. Middle Americans who actually vote in midterms, and we're talking about white, we're talking about slightly wealthier and older Americans, they usually vote whether or not there are high interest and enthusiasm numbers in the polls, which is another bit of nonsense. Oh, we are seeing high enthusiasm numbers and high interest. Well, how do you determine that? Usually vote on issues most important to them, which are the economy, healthcare, insurance, and security. And that includes the immigration issue or the so-called border issues. And when you look into these House districts, especially, and you look at the campaigns, that's what you find these candidates actually talking about. And people vote on whether a politician is accessible, whether they think they're nice or deserve a chance, and 100 other lesser qualities, unless that is the quality that results in winning the election. And then people want to look at it and figure it out. What they tell the media, what they tell the reporters, what they tell, you know, people when they voted, sometimes they lie about what they do and what they don't do. You don't know what actually is going to take place in the voting booth because those things are unpredictable because there's so many factors involved. So the picture is getting a little bit more focused for Republicans. People are now voting early. So as we speak, people are actually voting. And again, these elections are going to be determined by who votes. So if you are not helping your party get out the vote, well, you know, you have yourself to blame because it isn't just enough to vote. People are going to have to go out and actually work to get other people to vote if they expect to win. And that goes for Republicans as well as Democrats, depending on the district that you're in. That's the nature of politics. It's partisan and it's party driven. So for me, sitting on the sidelines and not taking a side, I want to see what happens. And then I want to see what happens after that. I'm certainly not going to predict it. All right. Thanks for listening to Podcast 769. Don't forget Ryan Plumbing and Heating. Have them come out and check your stuff to make sure that you don't have problems. Have them check your toilets. You don't want broken pipes when it gets cold, and you certainly do not want to have your furnace go down. Just check them out online at ryanplumbing.com or do a Google search. Thanks for listening to the Bob Davis Podcast on Stitcher.com, iTunes, TuneIn. We are on the Google Podcasts as well as Google Play. And, of course, right off the page at thebobdavispodcast.com. In fact, I would appreciate if people would do two things. One, share my posts when I post a podcast on Facebook. Visit the website, listen to the stream, or listen to podcasts off the website, and you can subscribe to the feed right off the page at the Bob Davis Podcast as well. Appreciate donations for Mobile Podcast Command, which eventually will be sallying forth. I'm not sure where I want to go yet. Still thinking about it. And that is all right there at thebobdavispodcast.com. Thanks for listening to Podcast 769. Let's just wait and see what happens on Election Day.